Anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal, or expected. An oddity. Peculiarity. Irregularity. Inconsistency. Incongruity. A rarity.
Do you guys listen to the Make It So podcast?
Sometimes, no.
Guys were talking about how there's certain things British people should never do, and dress like Klingon. A Klingon is one of them, because a Yorkshire accent coming out of a Klingon is just wrong.
Would you like some gawk with that? Gawk is best when served live. Doesn't sound right, does it?
Hello, everybody. We're really excited to talk to our friends from Treks and Sci-Fi about BSG last night. I'm Angela.
Oh, wait a second. I thought this was a Star Trek. I'm out of here.
I'm Angela.
And I'm Jen. Let's go down the list.
Hey, guys. It's Kenny from California. I'm actually a member of the Treks and Sci-Fi forums, and I guess Angela. No, it's Jen, the other one. Jen and I actually do the Ready Room podcast, which is the RPG game podcast for the Treks and Sci-Fi forums.
Welcome, Kenny.
And awesome. I'm a geek.
And you're a geek. You're an anomaly.
I'm an anomaly.
On this show, you're an anomaly.
Well, yes. I'm sorry. That's right. All right.
And next we have...
Hi, this is Rico. I do the weekly Treks and Sci-Fi podcast for way too many years, months, days now. I've met all of you through doing that, so that's great. And I normally talk about Star Trek, but I love Galactica, so I'm happy to be here today.
Welcome.
Welcome to our show.
And last but not least...
Hi there. This is Rick. I'm from Aberdeen. I host a weekly podcast that most of you probably don't know about. I'm a pastor at a church, and so I have a weekly podcast at clfgraysharbor.com. I also frequent the Treks and Sci-Fi podcast and forums.
All right. Well, part of our conversation, unfortunately, was cut short by crazy Skype. And the program
Pamela.
We used to record called Pamela. So unfortunately, the interesting conversation we had with the guys is gone.
It's gone.
Yeah, Angela and I are going to fill in the gaps.
It's in the podcast.
A week later.
It's in the podcast heaven.
Yes. So let's talk about Starbuck. That part is so we should probably start with her.
Okay.
She comes back with a spanking new shiny ship with some blood spattered on the windshield. Isn't that weird that after all this time, they would start showing that blood from the
Raiders?
They yes. now bleed in open space, which was interesting. Anyway, I thought it was a nice contrast.
And I think mainly what we touched on was Starbuck. And I think when we were talking about it, what happened was is we went back to the other four Cylons. And mm-hmm. the reason is because they're setting it up so that everybody on the ship thinks she's a Cylon.
Yeah.
But I think that we pretty much all agree that she's not.
Yes.
But, you know, it might be one of those double takes where it's like, you know, they're making them think she's a Cylon, us think she's not, but then she is going to be a Cylon or whatever. It's like, I mean, I would not put that past the creators of the show, but I just don't think that that's where they're going with her, because I think that would just be too easy, especially because, well, again, I don't want to go into it, but even stuff we were speculating, I speculated that the final four or final five were like a pre-model. You know, somehow they had to be improved on, or they were too human, or they weren't human enough, and somehow the seven that are together now are all like a better version as mm-hmm. far as the Cylons are concerned, but we don't know what that means. So again, that stuff we'll talk about later. So, but yeah, but as far as Starbuck's concerned, I think, don't you think that was the main thing, is that she's a lot, that she's basically, she is Starbuck. Oh, that was the other thing, is when she was telling Anders, when he was being all sweet to her and like, oh, if you were Cylon, you know, if you just woke up one day and realized you were Cylon, you know, I would still love you. And she's like, well, I would shoot you between the eyes. And it's like, how Starbuck can you get? I mean, that's, it's totally her, you know?
Yeah. She was being serious and at the same time sarcastic. Like, because she doesn't suspect him as a Cylon.
No,
so.
She doesn't suspect him, but I think she really would do that. And
yeah.
I don't put that past her at all. So that's what
I thought. It was interesting the treatment that she got as soon as she got out of her Viper from the people on, you know, the flight deck. Freaking out.
And it reminds me of the thing that the guys made fun of me on when we were recording this previously, because that stuff happens on Star Trek all the time, where somebody comes back and says, oh, well, I've only been gone an hour. Oh, no, you've been gone 4 weeks or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, we must investigate this. So,
they totally believe them.
And they totally believe them because there's not really any reason for them not to, you know. Mm-hmm. And in Battlestar, there's definitely lots of reasons for them not to believe her. Yeah. But I think us as an audience, I know I do, I believe her. Because there's some of that mystical, we've already put in some of the mystical energy of what the Cylons are doing and the, you know, the Final Four hearing a song and coming together and all those mystical things that I don't mm-hmm. think it's beyond... I don't think it's beyond
the universe.
The universe for her to have, you know, been kind of beamed somewhere, or, you know, whether it's advanced technology or it's some sort of magic, or it has to do with God or the gods. I mean, I don't know what it is, but some divine intervention. I just think that that's the main thing with Starbuck, and we did go on a little bit more, but I think that's the main thing
mm-hmm.
is about. Is she Cylon or not? And like you said, how she was treated. Is that's something that you brought up?
Yeah, Gaeta, it was totally ironic how horribly Gaeta treated her. He, like, you know, when they were in CIC and she was trying to find Earth on that map. And it just reminded me of right shortly after they left New Caprica and how everybody was anti-Gaeta.
Right.
And how quickly he forgets how that feels, you know?
Yeah, especially since he almost got thrown out the airlock.
Yeah. Exactly. And who swoops in to save the day but Superman?
Superman!
Kilo. He's such a good friend.
Kilo's my hero. Yeah, this is Starbuck. Because only Starbuck would be ridiculous enough to do something like this. You know? I mean, you could look at it that way. And obviously she's, you know, from the preview, she is still there, you know, to be asking for help in this manner. So I think it'll be interesting to see. I hope that she doesn't destroy mankind. I really hope that they don't, you know, lead everyone to Earth where we're all sitting here happy and then we get taken over by
Cylons.
But it's also, it goes back, this is my really dork side, but has anyone ever heard of Rossum's Universal Robots?
No.
It's a, I actually did a report on it in grad school. It's the first sci-fi play ever written. Huh. And it's basically about it's about the same thing. I wish I knew. It was in the 20s, it was written in the 20s. And it's about a race of robots that are created. It's almost kind of like The Matrix, but it's very limited, you know, it's not as sci-fi, you know, visual. And it's about these robots that look like humans, and because obviously that's easier to portray on stage. Mm-hmm. And they all, they basically start, they start gaining a consciousness, and they realize that they were being oppressed, and they start refusing to do work. I mean, it's very much kind of the same idea. It's kind of a, you know, overall sci-fi idea. And at the very end, there are two, after the war, there are two robots left and no humans. And basically the end of it is that the robots that look human are humans, and their names are Adam and Eve.
Oh. Uh-huh.
And that's the end of that play. And so it's like, anyway, I've been thinking that during this whole, and I mean, I think I would hope that most screenwriters would know this play because it's something that they teach in school, and it would be something that they would know about as one of the first sci-fi productions, kind of. And
Interesting.
I would look it up. It's called Rossum's Universal Robots. I'm sure you can probably find it, or RUR. And it's this, every time as we keep going through Battlestar, it makes me think about it, because that's, I'm thinking, is one of the things. What if the only people that survive are the Cylons, and that's what mm-hmm. we are, you know? That's kind of, anyway, just wanted to throw that out there as we're talking about the Cylons. So,
well, my curiosity is when they do finally show up at Earth, what timeline will it be in?
And
so maybe it is. Maybe it will be like that, and they'll show up at the beginning of time or whatever.
Right.
And
right.
Be very, very interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, so I just wanted to throw that out there for you guys, and if you wanted to look it up and see if that was of interest to you.
We can talk to Ron Moore.
I'm sorry, what?
You've been talking to Ron Moore.
I haven't. This is just from theater grad school. I don't know anything
about
anything. Also, okay, now the thing we've all been waiting for.
All right, I'm ready.
Is Baltar? every single time he came on screen, I just thought I was going to die. He had like those eyes were like
creepy, crazy.
Eyes. Like what?
Oh, the eyes are totally from Monty Python in Search of the Holy Grail. It's when they're in the forest with the knights who say, "Nee!" And they look around and the coconut shells are going, and he's like,
eyes are... It's not more like it was the castle anthrax. That's
there
what
you
I
go.
It was. I'm in too
oh,
much...
Oh, yes. Yes.
Spank me.
No more peril. I can add a little more peril.
Come this way, Baltar. What's your name? Zoot. Oh, okay.
Zoot.
We found this hidden compartment. We have named it the Castle Anthrax. We found this hidden place you can hide in.
It's the room.
And we will save you, yes. And the rest of us are going to leave, except with you in this one, we will leave you alone.
It's this huge room that no one seems to know.
No, how does that happen?
It's the room of requirement from Hogwarts.
Yeah, they're all sharing like bunks with 12 people in about a 2-foot square space, but there's this whole room that's like Baltar's, you know, Playboy mansion. And
Only the Manson family lives there.
It's all like graded all to Benton.
Back up for a minute, and when they found him and they were taking him and they put the blanket over his head, was that just the obvious let's make Baltar into Jesus?
Well, yes. I don't know if he's more like Jesus or Jim Jones, but
or Judas.
Or Judas.
Exactly. Seriously though, but they're really making him. I mean, that was just a visual frenzy there for a moment, and then you're going, okay, there's people worshiping him, and very interesting.
Well, yeah, and he's praying with them, and he's trying to save the kid, and it's way in your face of him being this prophet, coming.
But the great part about the writing in this is that he is morally, he cannot handle this role, and he knows it. And so that's the conflict that is set up here. He's looking at him like, what the heck? And at the same time, there's this power, this rush of power that he feels at the same time. So it's a very unique situation and a very well-written part to really make you go, ooh.
I was noticing that too. In several scenes, he actually did the right thing rather than the selfish thing that he normally does, where he prayed for the kid and told, you know, whatever God he was praying to take him instead. And he didn't know anyone was listening to him when he said that. That was a totally selfless act that he did. And then in the scene when he was attacked in the bathroom, while he was being attacked, he was telling them to leave the other person alone. When have we ever seen him care about anybody else other than himself?
Never.
But it almost goes back to that scene where you really saw him sign the death order for everybody, where he didn't have a choice. They killed the six. Do you remember that? He did protest, and so it's kind of hard. You know, he is a selfish bastard, but I think it's like Rick said, it's like. There is conflict there, and he does, and that's why it's so interesting to watch him. It's so interesting to watch him.
I think whoever, you know, however they're writing this, that they are playing it up with. I mean, because this is in my profession, obviously, I sense this a lot in people. There's good and bad in people, and there is a constant conflict, and I think they're bringing it out in him. I'm not sure exactly how it's going to end up. But I think it's a contrast to the rest of the show in the struggle of what do I do here?
Right.
I'm given this power, I have this influence, what do I do with it?
Right. I'm sorry, Kenny. You were talking about Baltar as the last Cylon?
Was I?
We talked last night. know, we chatted last night. Kenny, you and I chatted a little bit on Skype about the show.
Yeah, well, I'm not a fan of Baltar, but listening to you guys talk here, I'm like, okay, well, now I'm actually understanding more of him. I don't like the character. I wish they'd blow him out the airlock long ago. But I mean, listening to you guys talk, that's why I didn't go into the conversation much. It's very interesting how you guys, your perception of him.
I was nicknaming him Slime Tar a little while ago just because he's kind of slimy.
Yeah, I mean, I could see him being the sixth Cylon and the controller of it all, and he's an intricate part in the story somewhere. If he's not the sixth Cylon, he's definitely important to the whole Cylon scheme of things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, he's the one that started it all. I mean, yes, he did it accidentally by giving the codes, but he is the downfall of man.
Yeah.
You know, there's only 39,000 people left because of him.
Yeah.
You know? He tries to redeem himself, I just don't see him redeeming himself that much. He killed billions of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Accidentally.
But he still did it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's because he's weak. And aren't all people weak at some point?
Well, yeah. Yeah, but especially, not all people kill billions and billions of people.
No.
Not usually.
In their weak period.
It seems like he almost wants to die, though, now, in a way.
Yeah.
He's obviously, you know, he's pretty much punishing himself. I mean, there was some time, I think, on New Caprico where didn't he, like, push a gun into his face or his mouth and said, go ahead, shoot me. I forget when that scene was. And then, of course, last night with the razor against his throat.
That was awesome.
That was funny because I just watched a couple of days ago Sweeney Todd. Ooh. And when I saw that scene, I said, oh, my gosh, Baltar is being attacked by Sweeney Todd. he really wants it to be over. But the one scene that really got me last night was when he was there with the little boy and saying, you know, like, just take me, leave this little boy alone type of thing. You know, that kind of really hit home for me at least a little bit. And so we'll see. And I almost expect to see his hands starting to glow or something like that.
I thought that's what they were going to do.
Then it was going to become, he is Jesus or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Like, was going to up and start doing a tap dance.
And the stuff that's happening to Starbuck, too, there's a possibility of that kind of divine intervention happening in the show. I mean, the fact that that could – I mean, I think that is within the realm of possibility of him becoming some sort of prophet or – I mean, because we just don't know. We just don't know what the context is going to be. Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see. I do think that it's interesting to Kenny's point when – sometimes the six looks better than Baltar.
Right.
And it's like six is a very malevolent being, and she sometimes looks like she's a little bit better of a person than Baltar does. Like almost like because she's trying to like out, you know, she's trying to get her morality higher than her programming, whereas Baltar is doing exactly the opposite. In a lot of ways, like, you know, as a human, he should have this moral compass, but he doesn't. And she doesn't necessarily need a moral compass, but she is giving herself one.
They've done that a long time throughout the show. You know, they brought that whole point about the humans need to be worth saving and that she's actually, in a way, a lot more of a, you know, sort of like an upstanding, you know, human in a way than a lot of the, like Baltar and other ones that they've run into. So, they're becoming, and I think somebody said earlier, brought up the point, like, well, what if, maybe it was you, Angela, with maybe when they get to Earth, it's really these human type Cylons that are the ones that
actually start civilization.
Yes, exactly. That it sort of turns things on, you know, twists them around, that they've actually sort of evolved further in the way they are than the humans themselves.
Right.
They've learned kind of from the mistakes, and they brought the whole point about them being sort of the children of humans.
Yeah.
They've said that several times throughout the series, and that again would make sense that they could, you know, okay, well, you know, the parents have to die. What did that one guy? And then
The one who looks like Kevin Spacey guy.
Yes, Kevin Spacey.
The Kevin Spacey Cylon.
Yes. He said like the parents have to die for their children to survive or something like that. And so that's interesting stuff. And I don't know. I don't hope they don't knock off 39,000 humans just to make that happen. But
true.
They'll blend in. Yeah. If that happens, they'll probably just blend into the population.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I see happening.
Well, there's lots of interesting stuff. I'm excited to see what's going to happen next week. I hope I don't go into labor on a Friday.
That's what DVRs are
it's
for.
Like, we're not going to the hospital until I watch Galactica. That's it. you can just do your breathing.
Just make sure the hospital gets the Sci-Fi Channel.
I can see you doing your Lamaze thing.
No, Baltar, no.
Are there any more guesses on who this last Cylon is, though? They basically have said that this last one is aboard either, what was it, in the fleet or on Galactica?
I think they're on Galactica.
Yeah.
I think it's someone that everyone close. Knows.
Yeah.
Last week, Angela and I, we analyzed the Last Supper image that's on the Sci-Fi Channel website. There is clues as to, you know, what's going to happen this season in that image, because everything's very purposeful
and
the way they set things up.
You can find it in our archives at anomalypodcast.com.
I already downloaded
they said
it.
That,
I actually downloaded it.
Oh, good.
I think when they put that picture up, I think they did sort of say that they said that there are things in that picture. That
right.
Mean yeah.
Well, that brings it back to what I was going to say, is because in the Last Supper that was painted by Da Vinci, there are 13 people in that picture. Mm-hmm. In this image, there's 12. Mm. And there is the play set with a
goblet.
A goblet in front of it that's empty. So whoever is the final Cylon is not in that picture in Angela my assessment.
That's a good call,
That's what we think. Mm-hmm. And I think that the lady at the end is Deanna. No one believes me.
Almost all of the ones in the picture, there's a lot of them in there that are Cylons, right? I don't have a picture up right now.
Yes.
But the
final Cylon.
Six and Boomer.
Rosalyn, Adam, Starbuck.
And Tyrell. There's four Cylons, I think, that we know of in there.
And Tyrell's holding a combat knife.
Yeah.
So we were wondering as to what the significance of that is, whether it's
is
a
that?
Judas that's, scenario. Yeah,
it's a Judas
thing. No. That's from the Smallville episode he was just on.
We would like to thank Kenny, Rico, and Rick for participating in our Skype call.
And we hope that we get the technology better next time. So
yes. And hopefully we'll do some more Skype calls on BSG.
And the next time you hear us, we will be doing a mini-cast about the next episode of Battlestar. So look forward to that.
And in the meantime, visit our website at
anomalypodcast.com. That's anomalypodcast.com. And you can email us there, or you can email us directly at girlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z @gmail.com. I'm Angela.
And this is Jen.
And you've been listening to the Anomaly Podcast, where female and fandom converge.
So you come home after a rough day at the office, have a drink, torrent the latest movie, make a sandwich, buy a human off eBay, listen to your favorite podcast, and not leave them any feedback. I know what you're thinking. Perfect night, right? Wrong. Go to iTunes and leave them some feedback. And that's something to think about.
The Treks in Sci-Fi Podcast.
Stand by to receive our transmission.
Sci-fi entertainment news and commentary.
I am Locutus of Borg.
Star Trek episode analysis.
Captain of the USS Enterprise.
folky religions and ancient weapons.
Collectibles, toy, and prop reviews.
I am to misbehave.
The weekly Treks in Sci-Fi podcast with your host Rico at treksinscifi.com.